hardly imagine that there had been a time before Durzo Blint was a wet boy, though he supposed there must have been. The Count shook his head.
No. He used to kill people for me. That's how we know each other. That's how he knew he could trust me with you. Durzo doesn't have much of a social life outside his work, you know.
You? You ordered kills?
Not so loud. My wife knows, but there's no need to frighten the maids. I've tried not to preach at you with words, but rather let my life stand testimony to what I know, Kylar. But maybe I've erred in that. A saint once said, "Preach at all times. When necessary, use words." Can I take a minute of your time?
Some part of him wanted to say no. Not only was it awkward to hear someone you respect try to sell you something that you knew you weren't going to buy, but Kylar was living on borrowed time. It seemed that at any minute, news would arrive accusing Kylar of last night's theft, and this whole pretty picture would pop like a bubble. Logan would know him for what he was. Sira would have another chance to berate him. The Count would get that disappointed look on his face that cut to the bone. Kylar knew the Count would be disappointed in him, would never really know how much good Kylar had done last night, and at what cost to himself. The Count would be disappointed regardless of what Kylar did now. But Kylar didn't have to see it. "Of course," he said. It was the right answer. This man had raised Kylar, had allowed him to live a life impossible for a guild rat. Kylar owed it to him.
"My father inherited a large fortune from his father. Enough that he mingled with Gordon Grayson, Brand Wesseros, and Darvin McKell. I guess you wouldn't know about the McKells. They were wiped out in the 8 Years' War. Anyway, he tried to impress these sons of dukes by throwing money around. Lavish parties, gambling, renting out entire brothels. It didn't help that his own father died while he was still young. Of course, our family was soon in poverty. My father took his own life. So, at the age of 19, I took control of a house on the brink of ruin. I had a good head for business, but I saw it as beneath me. Like many who have no reason for pride, that very lack of reason for it made me the prouder. But certain realities have a way of making themselves felt, and debt is one of them. Not surprisingly, one of my father's debtors had a way that I could make easy money. I started working for the Sakage. The man who recruited me was Tremetier. If he'd been better at his job, he would have only gotten me deeper and deeper in the Sakage's debt, but I soon found out that I understood men and money and the ways they work together better than he did. Strangely enough, I had fewer qualms. I put my money into whatever made money. Specialty brothels to cater to any appetite, no matter how depraved. I started gambling dens and brought in experts from around the world to help me better separate my patrons from their money. I funded spice expeditions and bribed guards not to investigate the cargo. When one of my businesses was threatened, I had bashers take care of the problem. The first time they went too far and accidentally killed a man, I was shocked. But he wasn't someone I liked, and it was for my family, and I didn't have to see it. So that made it palatable. When I clashed with the Tremetier, it was an easy decision to hire Durzo. I was naive enough that I didn't realize he went to the Shinga immediately to get permission first. They gave it to him, and I became the Sakage Master of Coin.
Kylar was hearing every word, but he couldn't believe it. This couldn't be the Count Drake he had grown up with. Rimbold Drake had been on the Nine?
I traveled a lot, setting up businesses in other countries with fairly good success. and it was then I had my horrible revelation. Of course, I didn't see the horror in it at the time. I could only see my own brilliance. In 4 years I had paid off my family's debts, but now I saw a way to make real money. I sold the Sakage on the idea. It took 10 years, but we got our people in place and we legalized slavery. It was introduced in a limited form, of course, for convicts and the utterly destitute. People who couldn't care for themselves, we said. Our brothels filled with slave girls whom we no longer had to pay to work. We started the Death Games, another of my bright ideas, and they became a sensation, an obsession. We built an arena, charged the admission, monopolized the food and wine sold, ran the gambling, sometimes stacked the odds. We made money faster than we'd ever imagined possible. I hired Durzo so often that we became friends. Even he wouldn't take all the jobs I offered. He always had his own code. He'd take jobs on the people who were trying to take my business for themselves, but if I wanted someone dead who was just trying to stop me, I had to hire Anders Gurka, or Scarred Rabble, or Jonas Severing, or Hugh Gibbet. You have to understand with all this, I never considered myself a bad person. I didn't like the Death Games. I never watched, never went in the holds of the slave galleys where men lived and died chained to their oars, never visited the baby farms that sometimes became child brothels, never visited the scenes of Blint's work. I just said words, and money poured in like rain. The funny thing was, I wasn't even ambitious. I was richer than anyone in the kingdom, with the exception of some upper nobility, the Shinga, and the king. And I was comfortable with that. I just couldn't stand incompetence. Otherwise, I'm sure the Shinga would have killed me. But she didn't have to, because I wasn't a threat, and Durzo told her that. The Count shook his head. I'm rambling, sorry, but I don't get to tell these stories anymore. He sighed. My mistake came when I fell in love with the wrong woman. For some reason I was attracted to Ulana, but not just attracted, obsessed, and it took me a long time to figure out why. I even avoided her. It was so painful to be in her presence. But I finally figured out that it was because she was so unlike me. You see, Kylar, she was pure. And, strangely, she seemed to love me, too. Of course, she had no idea what I really was. I did none of my business under my own name, and few of the nobles had any idea of the kind of wealth that was becoming mine. The deeper I sank into the darkness, the more I loved her, and the more my shame grew. How can one love the light and live in darkness? The question lanced through Kylar. He felt ashamed. She started working on the slavery issue, Kylar, and she decided that she was going to visit the baby farms and the slave galleys and the fighting pits. I couldn't very well let her go alone, so for the first time I saw my handiwork. The Count's eyes grew distant. Oh, Kylar, how she moved among those wretches. In all the stench of human waste and despair and evil, she was a fresh, cool breeze, a breath of hope. She was light in the dark places I'd made. I saw a champion pit fighter, a man who'd killed 50 men, weep at her touch. I was a man tearing in half. I decided to get out, but like most moral cowards, I didn't want to pay the full price. So I traveled to Seth, where slavery is so different. I came back and, in secret, helped pass a law that would free the slaves every 7 years. The Sakage allowed it to pass, but tacked on a provision that made it effectively void. Then, one day, Ulana, who was then my fiancée, came to my estate, weeping. Her father and mother had been badly hurt in a carriage accident. She thought her mother was dying, and she needed me. At the same time, the Nine were meeting in my parlor because King Davin was on the verge of outlawing slavery again, and that, of course, would cost us millions. Do you know whom I sent away, Kylar?
You sent away the Nine?
Kylar was aghast. Such an insult would mean death. I sent Ulana away.
Damn.
Oh, sorry. No. That's how I felt. Damned. That's where the god found me, Kylar. I couldn't do it anymore. I was dead, inside. I thought it would be the death of me to cut my ties to the Sakage, especially when I realized that it wouldn't be enough to hand over my empire intact to someone who could continue it. Instead, I had to use all my cunning to hand it over to men who would tear it to pieces. So that's what I did. I used the money I had made to fund those who would rebuild the good I had destroyed and destroy the obscenities I had built. When I was done, I was penniless, my family was bankrupt, and I had dozens of powerful enemies. I went to Ulana, told her everything, and broke our engagement.
What did she do? Kylar asked.
It broke her heart to learn what I'd been, Kylar, and to learn that she'd known so little of me when she thought she knew everything. It took time, but she forgave me. I couldn't believe that, but she really did. It took me longer to forgive myself, but a year later, after slavery was outlawed once more, in part because of my own efforts against it, we were married. I've had to work hard for the last 20 years. I've often been held back by my old reputation, and sometimes by my new one. You know how most of the nobles look on those of us who actually work. But my money is clean, and the god has been good. My family has enough. My children are a joy to me. Logan has proposed to Sira, and she's said yes. I get to have Logan as a son. How haven't I been blessed? Anyway, I should have told you this long ago. Maybe you already knew some of it through the Sakage.
No, sir. I had no idea, Kylar said.
Son, I hope you see now that I do understand. I know what lies the Sakage tells, and I know what it can cost to get out. The god was gracious to me. He didn't make me pay all that I owed, but maybe I had to be willing to pay the full price. That's how repentance is different from regret. I had been sorry about how slavery turned out, but I wasn't willing to take responsibility for it. Once I was, the god could work in me.
But, sir, how are you still alive? I mean, you didn't just leave. You destroyed a business that earned them millions.
Count Drake smiled. God, Kylar. The god and Durzo. Durzo likes me. He thinks I'm a fool, but he likes me. He's protected me. He's not a man to cross lightly.
Thanks for the reminder.
The point is, Kylar, if you want to turn away from what you do, you can. You might miss your work. I imagine that you're excellent, and there is a joy in excellence. You can't pay for all you've done. But you aren't beyond redemption. There's always a way out, and if you're willing to make the sacrifice, the god will give you the chance to save something priceless. But I'm here to tell you, miracles do happen. Like this one.
He pointed out the window and shook his head, incredulous.
My daughter marrying a man as good as Logan. May the god be with them.
Kylar was blinking through tears, so he almost missed the count leaning forward further, looking toward the front gate. His eyes cleared as soon as he saw the soldiers push past the old porter. Kylar was on his feet in a moment, but the soldiers didn't come to the front door. They stopped when they reached Logan and Sierra, and the Count opened the window to hear the captain as he unrolled a scroll.
Duke Logan Gyre, you are hereby under arrest for high treason in the murder of Prince Aelin Gunder.
Chapter 46. Count Drake was out the door in an instant. Kylar hesitated at the very place he'd run into Logan 10 years ago and started their friendship with a fistfight. He shouldn't go out. There was no time to think how much the guards knew, but if they thought Logan had been involved in the prince's death, who knew what else they thought? The king must be totally paranoid. Whatever was happening, it was never a good idea to bring yourself to the guards' attention. But seeing the bewilderment on Logan's face dug into Kylar. He was just standing there as the smaller men disarmed him. He looked like a dog you'd kicked for no reason, eyes wide. Cursing himself for his stupidity, Kylar followed Count Drake.
"I demand an explanation," Count Drake said.
Despite his limp, he somehow moved with authority. All eyes turned to him.
We're making an arrest, sir. I'm afraid that's all I can tell you," the captain said.
He was a thick little man with yellow skin and almond eyes, but it seemed to take all of his determination just to stand before the count and not be blown away.
"You're attempting to arrest a duke, and you don't have the authority to do that, Captain Arturian. By the third amendments to the common law in the 8th year of the reign of King Hurral II, the arrest of dukes of the realm must be justified by habeas corpus, 2 witnesses, and a motive. Incarceration requires 2 of those 3.
Captain Arturian swallowed and seemed to be holding his spine straight only by an act of will.
Habeas corpus is holding the corpse, so I have to bring 2 witnesses or provide motive before you'll let me arrest the Duke?
If you have the corpse, Count Drake said.
The man nodded.
We do, sir. The prince's body was found last night at the Jadwin estate, and the motive is a matter of,
it doesn't bear speaking, sir.
If you attempt to arrest Duke Gyre at my home, outside the provisions of the law, as a noble of the land, I have the right and the obligation to protect him with the force of arms.
We'd slaughter you, one of the guards said, laughing.
And if you did, you'd touch off civil war. Is that what you want?
Count Drake asked. The man who'd spoken fell silent, and Vin Arturian went gray.
Either produce a motive that would lead a man of known moral excellence like Duke Gyre to kill one of his best friends, or be gone.
Milord, Captain Arturian said, his eyes downcast, forgive me. The motive was jealousy. For some reason, Kylar's eyes moved to Sierra. She still looked stricken by the news, but as the captain grew more awkward, she seemed to shrink into herself, as if she knew what he was going to say next.
Duke Gyre found out that the prince was having sexual relations with your daughter.
That's ludicrous, Logan said. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. For God's sake, she hasn't even made love with me. Her fiancé. Aelin gets around, but he would never...
Logan looked at Sierra and never finished the sentence.
Sierra, you didn't. Tell me you didn't.
It was as if his soul had been ripped naked, and all the darts in the world sank into it at once. Sierra keened, a sound of such woe it tore the heart. But none of the men moved. She ran away, back into the house, but they stood transfixed in Logan's pain. Logan turned to the Count.
You knew?
Rimbold Drake shook his head.
I didn't know who,
But she said she'd told you that all was forgiven.
Logan looked at Kylar.
The same,
Kylar said quietly.
Logan took it, like another dart.
He struggled for breath.
Captain, he said, I'll go with you.
The soldier who'd spoken before moved forward at the captain's signal and started putting the manacles on Logan's hands.
Damn, boy,
he said quietly, obviously only for Logan's ears, but in the stillness of the yard, his words were clearly audible.
You got fucked without even getting fucked first.
It was only the second time Kylar had seen Logan lose his temper. But the last time, he'd been a boy, and he hadn't been nearly as powerful as he was now. Maybe a wet boy would have noticed the muscles tensing in Logan's shoulders and arm. Maybe a wet boy would have had the reflexes to dodge. But the guard didn't stand a chance. Logan ripped his hand away before the second manacle clicked shut and hit the guard in the face. Kylar didn't think he'd ever seen anyone hit so hard. Master Blint, with his talent, strength, and muscles, could possibly hit that hard, but he wouldn't have the mass behind the blow that Logan did. The guard flew backward, literally. His feet left the ground, and he knocked over the two men behind him. Kylar's Siorin blade was in his hand before the guards hit the ground, but before he could wade into battle, he felt the Count's fingers dig into his arms.
No,
the Count said. Guards piled onto Logan, who roared.
No,
the Count said.
It is better.
His face was as pained as Logan's, torn between sorrow and conviction.
It is better to suffer evil than to do evil. You will not kill innocent men in my house.
Logan didn't put up a fight. The men took him down to the ground, put the manacles on him behind his back, put a second set on his legs, and finally stood him up.
Did the Count say your name is Kylar? Kylar Stern?
Captain Arturian asked.
Kylar nodded. The Crown charges you with treason, membership in the Sakage, accepting payment for murder, and the murder of Prince Aelin Gunder. We have a witness, corpse, and motive, Count Drake. Men, arrest him.
The captain might have been sympathetic, but he wasn't a fool. Kylar had been so caught up in what was happening to Logan that he hadn't noticed the men circle behind him. At the captain's word, he felt two men take hold of his arm. He swung his arms forward, only hoping to throw the men off balance so he could fall backward between them. But once again, his talent was there like a coiled viper, and he was suddenly stronger than he'd ever been. The men flew forward and crunched together, meeting along the blade of Kylar's sword. If he'd turned the blade, he could have gutted either of them, even through their boiled leather gambesons. Instead, he sheathed the sword.
How had he done it that fast?
He was still falling backward from throwing the guards harder than he intended, and the sword was already sheathed. Turning the fall into a back handspring was child's play. Kylar turned and ran toward a wall on one side of the Count's small garden. He jumped to grab the lip of the 12-foot-high wall and found the wall approaching instead at the level of his knees. It sent him over the wall in a vicious spin, and only by rolling into a ball and some significant luck was he able to land on the other side without killing himself. He stood and let the talent go. There were cries coming from within the walls, but they'd never catch him. Kylar was a wet boy now, in truth. He wondered what Blint would say. Kylar had achieved his lifelong dream, and he couldn't have been more miserable.
How was it?
Aegon asked Captain Arturian as they walked through the halls of the castle toward the maw.
It was awful, absolutely awful, sir.
I'd say it ranks with the worst things I've ever done.
Regrets, Captain?
They say he killed one of your men. If I may be blunt, he rid me of a fool that I couldn't kick out because the man's sister is a baroness. The idiot had it coming. I know it's not my place to say, Lord General, but you didn't see Logan's face. He's not guilty. I'd swear it. I know. I know, and I'm going to do everything I can to save him. They passed the guards who held the underground gate that separated the tunnels beneath the castle from those of the Maw. The nobles' cells were on the first level. They were small, but in relative terms luxurious. Aegon had Eline placed in one of these cells, though her status didn't afford it. He couldn't bear to have her put any lower, and if the king asked, he'd say that he wanted her kept close for further questioning. Aegon stepped outside Logan's cell.
"Vin," he said,
"does he know about his family yet?" The squat man shook his head.
"I'd already lost one man, sir. I didn't know what he would do if we told him."
"Fair enough. Thank you." It wasn't the dismissal Aegon would have given to one of his subordinates, but, though the Lord General's rank was the second only to the king's, the captain of the king's guards wasn't technically under Aegon's command. Fortunately, though they weren't friends, they were on good enough terms that Captain Arturian took the cue and excused himself. It wasn't going to be fun to tell a man who'd been jailed for a murder he didn't commit that his family had been slaughtered. But it was Aegon's duty. He always did his duty. Before he unlocked the door, Aegon knocked as if he were coming for a visit, as if they were anywhere else besides the Maw. There was no response. He opened the door. The nobles' cells were 10 feet square, all rock-polished smooth to prevent suicides. Each had a bare rock bench that served as a bed, and fresh straw was brought in every week. It was a luxury only compared to the rest of the Maw, and even with fresh straw, nothing could erase the rotten egg stench or the ripe tang of massed humanity in an enclosed space that wafted up from the rest of the cells. Logan looked oblivious. He looked like hell. Tears streamed down his bruised face. He looked up when Aegon came in, but his eyes took a long time to focus. He looked lost. His big shoulders slouched, his big hands open on his lap, hair askew. He wasn't alone. The queen was seated beside him, holding one of those limply open hands, as one would hold a child's. Bless the woman. She came to tell him herself. King Aelin the Ninth had totally missed with Nalia Wesseros. Nalia could have been one of his greatest allies. What a queen she would have made for Regnus Gyre. Instead, she'd accepted being pushed to the fringes of Aelin's scenario, even welcomed it, and had done everything she could to mother her four, now three, children. Aegon had long suspected that the children were all that kept her alive.
"My queen?"
"My lord," Aegon said.
"Pardon me if I don't rise,"
Logan said.
"None necessary.
They say that my father is dead too. Or they say that he did it. That the king sent men to arrest him for killing my mother."
"What happened?"
Logan asked.
"As far as I know, your father is alive. He arrived with only one or two men. He was attacked outside the city. Someone was trying to wipe out all the Gyres but you. Men were sent to arrest him, but not on the king's orders. I haven't found out who did give the orders, not yet. Those men either fled the city or they joined your father. I don't know which."
"Lord General, I didn't kill Aelin," Logan said. "He was my friend. Even if he did what they say he did."
"We know. We, the Queen and I, don't think you did it."
He talked to me last night, you know. He knew I was going to propose to Sera. He tried to persuade me not to. He reminded me of the rumors about Sera getting around. He had this crazy idea that I married Janine. I thought it was strange, but that he was being magnanimous. It wasn't magnanimity. It was guilt. Damn him. Logan looked at the Queen. I'm sorry, I shouldn't talk this way, but I'm so... so angry. And I feel so guilty for it at the same time. I would have forgiven them, Your Majesty. I would have. Gods! Why didn't they just tell me? They cried silently together, and the Queen just squeezed Logan's hand. After a minute, Logan looked up at Aegon. They say Kylar did it. At Count Drake's. I saw him move. He was fast. Too fast. But are you sure? Gods. The boy had just been betrayed by his fiancée and the prince. Now he wanted to know if he'd been betrayed by his best friend as well. Aegon didn't know if he would survive it, and he needed him to survive it. But Logan deserved the truth. It wasn't in Aegon to give him less. I'm sure Kylar was upstairs when Aelyn died. I'm sure he's a wet boy. I doubt his real name is Kylar or that he's a Stern, but I won't know that for 2 weeks. We've sent a rider to their estates, but it's a week's ride each way. I can't put everything together in any other way, son, and I've been trying. Your being here is a kindness, Logan said. His back straightened. And I don't want to take that away from you, but I'm guessing that you want something from me, or you wouldn't both have come here. Not now, not so soon. The Queen and the Lord General looked at each other. Something passed between them, and the General said, You're right, Logan. The truth is, the kingdom's in peril. I wish that we could be sensitive to your grief. You know that your father is one of my dearest friends, and what happened to your house is more than a tragedy. It's a monstrosity. But we have to ask you to put your feelings aside for a time. We don't know how bad the threat is, but I believe that it's dire. When the king decided to get rid of your father one way or another 10 years ago, it was I who suggested Screaming Winds. I knew that your father would make the garrison there a real stronghold, and I believed that Kalador would invade sooner or later. Perhaps because he did such an excellent job, that invasion hasn't come. Most people want to believe that it won't come, because they know that if the might of Kalador marches, we don't stand a chance. I believe that the prince, your mother, and your servants were the first casualties in a war. A new kind of war that uses assassins instead of armies to gain its will. We can stop armies, we've been preparing for that. Assassins are a different story. Begging the Queen's pardon, Logan said. Why should I care if the king's head rolls? He's been no friend to the Gyres.
A fair question, the Queen said.
On a personal level, Aegon said, you should care, because if the king dies, you'll either stay in prison forever, or you'll be killed. On a national level, if the king dies, there will be civil war. Troops will be called back to the respective houses to which they are loyal, and Kalador's armies will pour over our borders. Even united, our country couldn't stand against Kalador's might. Our only strategy has been to make it so costly to take us that the price would be too high. With our armies scattered, we'd be defenseless.
So you think an assassination attempt is coming?
Logan asked. Within days. But Kalador's plans rest on certain assumptions, Logan. So far, they've been valid assumptions. They knew that you would be arrested. No doubt they've already planted rumors to stir up the people against the king, suggesting that everything that's happened has been his fault or his plan. We have to do something beyond anything Kalidor has considered.
And what's that?
The Queen said, Kalidor has hired Hugh Gibbet, perhaps the best wet boy in the city. If he wants to kill Aelin, he probably can. The best way to save the king's life is if the taking of it won't gain Kalidor anything. Maybe it's the only way. We have to assure the line of succession. In a time of peace, or if she were older, Janine might take the throne, or I might. But now, that simply wouldn't be possible. Some of the houses would refuse to follow a woman into war.
Well, what are you supposed to do, have another son?
Aegon looked queasy.
Sort of.
The Queen said, We need someone who's popular enough to win the people's trust back to the throne, and whose claim to the crown would be beyond dispute.
Logan looked at him, and sudden understanding washed over him. Emotions warred on his face.
You don't know what you're asking.
Yes, I do,
the Queen said quietly.
Logan, has your father ever spoken of me?
Only in terms of highest praise, Your Majesty.
Your father and I were betrothed, Logan. For 10 years we knew we were going to marry. We fell in love. We named the children we would someday have. The king was dying without heirs, and our marriage was to have secured the throne for House Gyre. Then my father betrayed Regnus and broke his word to your grandfather by marrying me in secret to Aelin Gunder. There were only enough witnesses present to ensure the legality of the marriage. I wasn't even allowed to send a message to your father beforehand. The king lived for another 14 years, long enough for me to have children, long enough for your father to marry and have you, long enough for your father to take control of House Gyre, long enough for House Gunder to fabricate some ridiculous history that supposedly gave Aelin the right to be called Aelin the Ninth, as if he were a legitimate king. When King Davin died, your father could have gone to war to take the throne. He could have won it, but he didn't. For my sake, and the sake of my children. I was sold into a marriage I despised, Logan, to a man I never loved, and for whom I could never make love grow in my breast. I know what it is to be sold for politics. I even know my literal price in the lands and titles my family secured after the king's death. There was iron in her as she spoke, clearly, calmly. Every inch the queen. I still love your father, Logan. We've barely spoken in 25 years. He had to marry a Grayson after I married a Gunder, just to keep House Gyre from becoming isolated and wiped out, like the McKells were. He accepted a marriage that I've heard had little love in it. So if you think it pleases me to do to you what was done to me, you couldn't be more mistaken.
Logan's father had never spoken of such things, but his mother, it was suddenly so clear. His mother had been reminding Regnus of it for years, her sidelong comments, her constant suspicions that Regnus had other lovers, though Logan knew he hadn't. His father's angry remark once, that there was only one woman that she had any right to envy.
I have hope that your marriage will not be the agony mine has been,
Queen Gunder said. Logan put his face in his hands.
Your Majesty, words can't express the fury I feel towards Syrah. But I gave her father my word that I would marry her.
The king can legally dissolve such bonds for the good of the realm, Aegon said.
The king can't dissolve my honor, Logan said. I swore and Damn it! I still love Sierra. I still love her. It's all play-acting, isn't it? What's the plan, that the king adopt me, that I be his heir until you bear him another son? That play-acting gets us through a crisis, son, Aegon said, and it keeps your family from being destroyed. You have to stay alive if you want that to happen. It also happens to save you from disgrace and prison, even if we're wrong about the plot.
Logan, the queen said, her voice quiet again. It isn't play-acting, but we've convinced the king that it is. He is a despicable man, and if it's up to him, he will never let Regnus's son take the throne.
Your Majesty, Aegon interrupted. Logan doesn't need to...
No, Brandt. A person ought to know what they're being asked to give. She looked him in the eye, and after a moment, he looked down. She turned to Logan. My hope has been my children, Logan, and I lay Aline's death at my husband's feet. If he'd not gotten involved with that Jadwin whore... She blinked her eyes, refusing to let tears fall. I have given the king all the sons he will have from me. I will not share his bed again. Ever. He will be told that if he seeks to force me to his bed, or replace me as queen, we have retained the services of a wet boy to make sure he finds an early grave. The fact is, Logan, if you say yes, you will one day be king. He said nothing. Most men would leap at the chance for such power, Aegon said. Of course, most men make terrible kings. We know you wouldn't ask for this, but you aren't only the right man for it. You're the only man for it.
Logan was the name Regnus and I had decided on for our first son, the queen said. I know what I'm asking, Logan. And I'm asking.
Chapter 47. The game wasn't going well. The pieces were spread out before Dorian like armies, except that they weren't like armies. They were armies, though in this game, few of the soldiers wore uniforms.
Even those who did moved with reluctance. The fool king shamed the commander. The reluctant king was kneeling somewhere at this moment. The mage in secret's secret had split him from the king who might have been. The shadow that walks and the courtesan couldn't decide which side they were on. The rent boy was moving fast, but too slow, too slow. The prince of rats had marshaled his vermin, and they would rise from the warrens, a tide of human filth. Even the rogue prince and the blacksmith might play a part. If. Blast! It was hard enough just envisioning the pieces as they were. From there, he could often focus on one piece and see the choices it faced. The commander as a drunk king shouted in his face, the shadow that walks as he faced the apprentice in a honeymoon chamber. But just as he was fixing the pieces in space, setting their relative positions, he'd start seeing one or more at a different time.
Seeing where the blacksmith would be in 17 years... stooped over a forge, urging his son back to work, didn't do him any good in figuring out how to keep Fir alive until that day.
He went back to work. Now, where was the kidnapped? Sometimes he felt as if he were but a breath of wind over the field of battle. He could see everything, but the most he could hope to do was blow one or two killing arrows off course. Where is that mage in secret? Ah!
Open the door, quick! Dorian said.
Fi'ir looked up from the little table where he was seated, dragging a whetstone across the face of his sword. They were in a little house they'd rented off Sidlin, where Dorian said they would be left alone. Fi'ir rose and opened the door. A man was just disappearing past it, walking determinedly down the street. His hair and gait were familiar. He must have seen something out of the corner of his eye. Of course, the blonde mountain that was Fi'ir was hard to miss, because he turned on his heel, his hand dropping to his sword.
Fi'ir?
Fi'ir looked almost as surprised as Solon was. So Dorian said,
"Both of you, inside!"
They came in, Fi'ir giving a customary grumble about how Dorian never told him anything, and Dorian just smiling. So much to see, so much to know. It was easy to miss things right under your nose.
"Dorian,"
Solon said. He embraced his old friend.
"I ought to wring your neck. Do you know how much trouble your little Lord Jaya bit cost me?"
Dorian laughed. He knew.
"Oh, my friend,"
he said, holding onto Solon's arms.
"You did well."
"You look well, too," Fi'ir said. "You were fat when you left. Look at you now. A decade of military service has done you right."
Solon smiled, but the smile faded fast.
"Dorian, seriously, I have to know. Did you mean that I needed to come serve Logan, or did you mean Regnus? I thought you'd said Lord Jaya and not Duke Jaya, but when I got here, there were two Lords Jaya. Did I do the right thing?"
"Yes, yes. They both needed you, and you saved both of them several times. Some you know, some you don't."
Perhaps the most important thing Solon had done was something he would never appreciate. He had encouraged Logan's friendship with Kylar.
"But I won't lie to you. Keeping your secret was something I didn't foresee. I thought you would have shared it years ago. Down most paths I see now, Regnus Jaya will lose his life."
"I'm a coward," Solon said.
"Pah," Fi'ir said. "You're many things, Solon, but you're not a coward."
Dorian kept silent and let his eyes speak empathy. He knew differently. Solon's silence had been cowardice. Dozens of times he'd tried to speak, but he could never summon the courage to risk his friendship with Regnus Jaya. The worst of it was that Regnus would have understood and laughed about it, if he'd heard it from Solon's own lips. But discovering deceit in a friend felt like betrayal to a man who'd had his fiancée sold out from under him to another man.
"Your powers have grown," Solon said.
"Yes, he's truly insufferable now,"
Fi'ir said.
"I'm surprised the brothers at Shosendi let you come here," Solon said.
Dorian and Fi'ir looked at each other.
"You left without permission?"
Solon asked.
Silence. "You left against their direct orders?"
"Worse,"
Dorian said. Fi'ir barked a laugh that told Solon he'd been put into another plan of Dorian's that he couldn't believe.
"What did you do?"
Solon asked.
"It belonged to us, really. We're the ones who found it again. They didn't have any right,"
Dorian said.
"You didn't."
Dorian shrugged.
"Where is it?"
Solon asked. From the bland looks on their faces, he knew.
"You brought it here?"
Fi'ir walked to the little bed and threw back the blankets. Curoc lay sheathed on the bed. The scabbard was white leather, inlaid with gold Cyrillic script and capped with gold.
"That's not the original scabbard, surely." "It's work like this that makes me want to never be a swordsmith," Fi'ir said. "The scabbard is the original, woven thick with magic as fine as Gandian silk. and I think all that's just to preserve the leather. It won't stay dirty. It won't take a mark. The gold inlay is real, too, pure gold, hardened to where it would stand against iron or even steel. If I could figure out that technique alone, my heirs would be rich to the 12th generation. We've barely dared unsheathe the sword, and of course we haven't tried to use it, Dorian said.
I should hope not, Solon said. Dorian, why would you bring it here? Have you seen something?
He shook his head.
Artifacts of such power skew my vision. They themselves, and the lusts they invoke, are so intense that it fogs my sight.
Suddenly, he was drifting again. But drifting was too gentle a word for it. His vision latched on to Solon, and images streamed past him. Impossible visions. Solon against incredible odds. Solon as a white-haired old man, except not old, but blast! The image disappeared before he could understand it. Solon, Solon, Solon. Solon dying. Solon killing. Solon on a storm-tossed ship. Solon saving Regnus from a wet boy. Solon killing the king. Solon dooming Cenaria. Solon propelling Dorian into Calidor. A beautiful woman in a chamber of 100 portraits of beautiful women. Janine. Dorian's heart lurched. Gareth Ursul. Dorian? Dorian? The voice was distant, but Dorian grabbed onto the sound and pulled himself back to it. He shook himself, grasping as if emerging from a cold lake.
It's getting worse as you get stronger, isn't it?
Solon asked.
He trades his mind for the visions, Fi'ir said. He won't listen to me. My sanity isn't necessary for the work I must do, Dorian said simply. My visions are...
The dice were in his hand, not just two dice, a whole handful of dice, each with a dozen faces.
How many 12s can I throw?
He would be throwing blind. He could see that Solon already was thinking he should leave, that no matter how good it was to see his old friends, he had to try to save Regnus Gyre. But Dorian had a feeling. That was the damnable thing. Sometimes it was as logical as a sesh game. Sometimes it was just an itch.
Anyway, where were we?
He asked, playing the oblivious seer.
Fi'ir doesn't have enough talent to use Curoc. If he tried, he'd either burn or explode.
No offense, friend. You have finer control than either of us. I could use it, but only safely as a Meister. My mage powers probably aren't strong enough. Of course, using it with the Veer would be a total disaster. I don't even know what I'd do. Of us, Solon, you're the only mage in the room, or the country for that matter, who could hope to even hold it without dying, though it would be a near thing. You'd die if you tried to use more than a fraction of its power.
He gazed into space as if he were suddenly caught by another vision.
The line was set. Surely you didn't bring it all this way for nothing, Solon said. Set and sprung.
No, we had to get it away from the brothers. It was our only chance. If we'd waited until after we returned, they would have known they couldn't trust us. It would have been kept far from us.
Dorian, you still believe in that one god of yours, don't you?
Solon asked.
I think he sometimes confuses himself with him, Fi'ir said.
It was uncharacteristically bitter, and it struck Dorian deeply. It hurt because it was deserved. He was doing it right now.
Fi'ir's right, Dorian said. Solon, I was setting you up to take the sword. I shouldn't treat you that way. You deserve better, and I'm sorry.
Damn, Solon said. You knew I was thinking of taking it.
Dorian nodded.
I didn't know if it's the right thing or not. I didn't know you'd walk in our door until a second before you did. With Kyorok, everything gets twisted. If you use it, Kalador may well take it from us. That would be a disaster far greater than losing your friend Regnus, or even losing this entire country.
The risk is unacceptable, Fir said.
What good does it do anyone if we don't use it? Solon said.
It keeps it out of the hands of the Vergmeisters, Fir said. That's good enough. There's only a handful of mages in the world who could use Kyorok without dying, and you know it. We also know that there are dozens of Vergmeisters who could. With Kyorok in their hands, what could stop them?
I have a feeling about this, Dorian said. Maybe the god is nudging me. I just think it's right. I feel like it's connected to the Guardian of Light.
I thought you'd given up on those old prophecies, Solon said.
If you take Kyorok, the Guardian will be born in our lifetimes.
Even as Dorian said it, he knew it was true.
I've been living so long saying I had faith, but it isn't really faith when you just do what you see, is it? I think the god wants us to take this crazy risk. I think he'll bring good out of it.
Fir threw up his hands.
Dorian, the god is always your out. You run into a wall rationally and you say the god is speaking to you. It's ridiculous. If this one god of yours created everything, like you say, he also gives us reason, right? Why the hell would he make us do something so irrational?
I'm right.
Dorian, Solon said. Can I really use it? If you use it, everyone in 50 miles will know it. Maybe even the ungifted. You run all the normal risks of drawing too much power, but your upper limit is higher than its lowest threshold. Things are happening too fast for me to see much, but I'm going to tell you this, Solon. The invasion force was headed for Modai.
Until Kylar didn't kill Durzo Blint.
So they were prepared for a different kind of war. The boats arrive tonight. They have 60 Meisters.
60? That's more than some of our schools, Fir said.
There are at least 3 Vergmeisters capable of calling forth pitworms.
If I see any little men with wings, I'll run, Solon said.
You're mad, Fir said. Dorian, we need to leave. The kingdom's doomed. They'll capture Kyorok. They'll capture you. And then what hope will the rest of the world have? We need to pick a battle we can win.
Unless the god is with us, we won't win any battles, Fir.
Don't give me that bullshit. I won't let Solon take Kyorok, and I'm taking you back to Shosendi. Your madness is taking you.
Too late, Solon said. He scooped up the sword from the bed.
We both know I can take that away from you, Fir said.
In a sword fight, sure, Solon agreed. But if you try to take it, I'll just draw power through it and stop you.
Like Dorian said,
every Meister within 50 miles will know we have an artifact here, and they'll all come looking for it.
You wouldn't, Fir said.
Solon's face took on an intensity Dorian hadn't seen since he'd left Shofasti, wearing his first blue robes. Now, as then, the slab of a man looked more like a soldier than like one of the foremost mages of his day.
I will do it, Solon said. I've given 10 years of my life for this backwater, and they've been good years. It's been damn good to stand for something rather than just watch from the side and criticize everyone who's actually doing something.
You should try it. You used to, you know.
What happened to the Fir Kusat, who went and took this sword in the first place? I'm going to do something here. Don't spoil my chance to make it be useful. Come on, Fir. If we